everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of them can make a play against and make a dash win. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the Tide, Honey Badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, not that it mattered, but was that the biggest quarterback you've ever seen?
Man, it was close. You know, he carried his weight well, but I guess you can do that when you're 6'7". There was one play where Deron Payne was trying to take him down, and he was kind of dragging Deron a little bit. And so you got to be a big boy to do that.
And Deron had to double clutch, man. He got him, and he's like, wait a second, like moving a big piece of furniture. Let me get another grip on this.
Yeah, when he would huddle up, man, you could see his helmet clearly above the offensive lineman, which really looked kind of odd. I know they're growing him bigger at the quarterback position, but he will be interesting for Alabama in a couple years when he's got a couple years under his belt.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, we'll take us to offense, man. What stood out to you when the Tide had the ball?
You know, a couple different things. First of all, just wanted to talk again about just the versatility of this offense. Yep. And of all the different sets. You know, there was several different times that we were lining up in numerous formations with numerous wide receiver and running back combinations, you know, trying to get guys on the field in situations where they're, you know, where it showcases their strengths. There was one time where Joshua Jacobs, you know, thought he was coming out of the game and he stayed in with Bo Scarborough.
Yep.
And then he, you know, motioned over pre-snap, you know, to the left slot only to come back and to, fake a run to the right and then, you know, just draw the offense, you know, draw the defense that way. And, you know, I'll talk about another couple of plays here in a minute that I specifically want to talk about, but just want to get your thoughts on it. Just love how many different ways we're using the personnel.
Yeah, I do too. I like, you know, and we've talked about this, we're being multiple in ways that we always talked about wanting to be multiple. And, you know, it's one of my favorite stats is to look at our ball distribution. And, you know, we had eight different guys catch the ball, three of which were running backs, three of which were freshmen. Didn't see the tight end get the ball. Would have liked to have seen that. But, you know, we did try to, be a little bit creative in trying to get it to the backs. I like having Jacobs in there, little packages and sub-packages we have with him. And I think it does create some interesting versatility when he's in there with another running back. I just think that it puts a personnel grouping bunch on there that really I think can confuse a defense. So I like that we're playing, you know, head games like that, and we're looking for, you know, schematic advantages. I really enjoy watching that.
Well, and when Jacobs was in with Bo Scarborough, as we've talked about, right, they have been utilized a lot in the passing game. And so when you bring both of them in at the same time, it's really going to mess up defenses because they truly don't know who's going to get the ball there. So that's important. And just while we're on the topic, you know, contrast that to Arkansas, you know, it was a very vanilla, you know, type of offensive scheme, you know, two wide outs, two tight ends, you know, running back and a fullback. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you compare it to our side of the ball, you know, the defense had to be licking their chops. We'll get to that in a minute on we flip the field. But the defense had to be licking their chops because they're going up against this offense during practice. And then when they come out with a team that isn't that multiple, they're like, well, is this all you got? I mean, you know, right. Show me something else.
Yeah, it's easy. You know, it's much more predictable and the defense can play downhill a little bit. You know, I want to pick on, you know, Jacobs and Bo being in there at the same time, just the versatility. And it's one thing just to say that, you know, names and positions, you can do these things, but there's a little literal, you know, translation that these are the things that we can do, you know, to great effect. I mean, you put them in there, you know, you could go power run, you know, with a tight end, you can definitely go a power run circumstance, but then you can split them out and in essence go five wide. And it's running backs and tight ends, but still, that's something that you can do and be effective. And I think that, you know, from play to play to play, you can really keep the defense on their heels. You know, it goes back to, if you're a defensive coordinator, how do you try to stop Alabama? And even over the last couple of years, there's been a little bit of a recipe, you know, for that. You know, last year it was definitely, you know, make Jalen beat you with his arm. The year before that, especially earlier in the season, it was rattle, you know, Coker, and, you know, cut off the, you know, sort of the jet sweep, those type of plays. And you could really, you know, attempt to stifle the tight offense. And I'm not saying that, you know, Jalen's a second coming of Joe Montana, but he's better passing this year than he was last year. And then you start to distribute the ball a little bit. It really is tougher to defend the tight offense. And I think Arkansas had, there was sort of a malaise in the middle of the game. I think, you know, Alabama kind of let off the gas, and I think Arkansas kind of found their stride on defense, but I think the Tide sort of powered through that. And that was certainly good to see, but I think it's also a testament to the diversity of the offense.
Oh, it is, man. There was one, and we just have never seen this, right? I mean, there was one sequence on just the second drive of the game where, you know, first and 10, Josh Jacobs runs for 9 yards. The very next play, second and one, Bo Scarborough runs for 10 yards. And three plays later, Damian Harris gets the ball. Dude, we've been doing this show a long time, and we were in school there before. And that's a six-play sequence of which three different running backs ran the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's just big stuff.
Well, it is. And think even just a couple of years ago, and it's not for a difference of talent. I mean, it was a couple of years ago, we had, you know, Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson and Eddie Lacy, and we would play, the starter would get, you know, 22-3, you know, series, then the backup, and then go back to the starter, and then the backup, and then, you know, in the second half, you'd start to get to the third guy. Well, you're talking about a series early in the game where we've got three guys sort of in and out. And so there's been a little bit of a philosophy shift with Nick Saban that we're still going to rotate and play different guys, but it's not as sort of rote. It's not as prescripted as it has been before. And I think that has a little bit to do with what's everyone's, you know, everyone can run everything, but what's everyone's best plays? And then let's mix and match from there. I think that is, you know, that's the essence of multiple.
No, it is. And it's, you know, that's a good lead into another comment I wanted to make is a couple of series later, there was a particular play call where Bo was in the game, and Jalen, or actually, I beg your pardon, I believe, no, this was actually on the same series. So on the same series after Josh and Bo had a carry, Jalen Hurts has an incomplete pass, and it's now second and 10 at the Arkansas 46. And they split, they actually split Irvin Smith Jr. wide to the right in the slot, but they have three wides to the right. And Irvin is the inside guy of the two slot guys. And they swing out Bo after bringing him in motion and throw him the ball. And all three of these wide receivers have to block a man.
Mm-hmm.
But Irvin Smith, who's a bigger boy than a wide receiver, was specifically put there as the inside slot guy. And his job was to get the outside linebacker who was left unblocked as soon as he peeled out. And he was big enough to be able to make that block better than a Calvin Ridley or somebody.
Sure.
And the outside linebacker didn't know it was coming, right? Irvin Smith set up perfect. He's got 10 yards distance. He's got leverage. You know, he's got the angle. It's a very easy block for him to make. The next thing you know, Bo gets, I mean, really effortlessly, in an effortless way, he gets 8 yards on that pass play. And so now it sets up for 3rd and 2 at their 38 of Arkansas's, which is a very doable 3rd and 2. And so it just speaks to the play calling, I think, too, man, because because first and 10 doesn't go your way. You're at the 46-yard line of the other team. You know, you want to get points on the board. And so you come back with this play, the very next play, and just shows me there's a lot of class time being done. And when they talked about, you know, at the beginning of the season, how many plays and packages they were putting in, you know, it appears as if they're putting in enough stuff, you know, similar to an NFL type of offense.
Yeah, I agree. And it's almost like, you know, an advanced class on offense. It's not that we've got a playbook and you know, they can all, you know, every play can score if everyone blocks their, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's not like we've got this playbook and we're just going to dial up these plays. It is truly the study of the plays against a formation, against a defense that says this play will get us 8 yards. When we run this play, it's going to get us 8 yards. And when we run this play, you know, we can get that, you know, we can get 12 yards. And so it's really pulling these plays, stringing them together
at the right time,
and, you know, situationally and at the right time. And like you said, we're going to run this out of this formation group. And here's exactly how it's going to go down. And it's going to get the first, or it's going to get darn near close to it. And, you know, when you're 3rd and 10, 3rd and 8, you know, that type of, or, you know, 2nd and 10, 2nd and 8, you know, that kind of thing, that, you know, what you want to do is you want to get a big chunk of it. You're not always going to get the first, but you want to get, you know, 75% of it. And it's just, it becomes, when you've done all of the work, it becomes color by numbers because you've got it all sort of mapped out. But damn, that's a lot of work.
No, it is. And it's just giving them such an advantage in these football games, because the versatility and the packages and the personnel, and it just shows the film study of getting these guys in the certain plays that they are going to be more successful. You know, Josh Jacobs is going to have more success catching this ball out of the backfield than this other running back is, blah, blah, blah. And so it's just fun. Right. Another thing I want to get your take on very quickly was early in the game here, when, you know, we ended up having to settle for a field goal on the drive, the second, obviously the first one wasn't really called a drive with Damian, but on the second short drive when we got a field goal,
mm-hmm.
We had a 3rd and 6 at the Arkansas 21-yard line. And, you know, that's when he threw the pass to Robert Foster. And yep. You could clearly see that there had been a signal to Robert Foster that you've got press coverage. And he was the only wide receiver who had a cornerback pressed in front of him. The other guys had some distance on their guys. And so there was a signal given to him that, you know, the ball's coming to you. And it appeared as if he broke off the route and should have been going, you know, on into the end zone for a fade route. And so that's frustrating. And so we'll never know who missed what, but it appeared as if he missed the signal, because that's where Jalen put the ball. And if he did miss the signal, you know, plays like that is going to, you know, speak to, you know, not getting it done right there at a key moment. Obviously, it didn't cost him the game, but, you know, just wanted to mention that nuance to the, you know, and get your take on it.
No, I wanted to talk about that as well. You know, it did seem that Foster broke off the route, that he sort of gave up on the play. You know, he almost came to a full stop and the ball was still in the air. And it's hard, you know, TV angles and so it's hard to tell. Was it uncatchable? I don't know, but
you got to keep going though.
You run out of the end zone with your arm up because you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And so I wonder, you know, we talked last week, you know, there was a series where it just seemed, you know, Foster just, you know, his head wasn't in the game, and they showed him on the bench last week and just not, he wasn't sort of rallying himself back. And he's a senior, right? You could see like a sophomore sort of getting, you know, lost in the doldrums, but you know, a senior, this is his opportunity. And Saban had, this was last week going into the Arkansas game. He had a press conference and all the headlines that I read about it, and I'll listen to the conference as well, you know, talked about, you know, Saban worries about his players, you know, having anxiety over, you know, performance on the field. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I do want to hear, you know, what Coach really has to say about that, because the headlines sometimes are misleading. And you know, Saban was talking about that, but he really colored an example of, you know, you've got guys on your team that are worried about what's going to happen in a couple of months rather than focusing on what they can do right now and on the next play and in the next practice and in the next game and in the next opportunity. And to me, that just, I mean, he was in a bullhorn saying, Robert Foster, I'm talking to you. You know, after last week's game and hearing him say that, I just, that was hand in glove. And then it just seemed, and I thought, and I said this on last week's show, that, hey, we're going to go to Foster early and to try to get him back, you know, get his head back, you know, in the game. Remember a couple of years ago, was it Kenny Bell on the team? And he quit mid-season and, you know, was out of practice a day, and coach, you know, brought him back, and whatever needed to be sorted out was sorted out. But Kenny Bell caught a touchdown that next week, and you know, that's sort of one of those moments that's kind of lost in history because, you know, no blood, no foul. But Robert Foster, I wonder, like, does he need to quit practice a day or so? I don't know. He needs something to get his head back in the game. And I think Coach was trying to do that through the media last week, and I don't know that it took based on what we saw Saturday.
Well, on that same play, Calvin Ridley felt like the ball should come to him, and he felt like he had single coverage against a safety, and so he was on the, you know, far right there, and he was giving the same hand signal to Jalen Hurts.
Yep.
And Jalen Hurts did it back, or just raised his hands and did it, and Calvin thought that he saw it, and Calvin went and ran the same fade. He was expecting the ball to come to him that got thrown to Foster.
Right.
And as he was coming off the sideline, he was talking to Jalen, saying, hey, I gave you the signal.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I'm the go-to guy here. I gave you the signal, and you didn't see the signal. And Jalen held his hands back up as well. And so that was interesting. And then the very next series, the true freshman, Jerry Jeudy, when he caught that nice pass to the, yep, to the one-foot line, I don't know if you noticed, it was the same exact thing. Jerry Jeudy had press coverage. He had the best matchup on us. I'm sorry, he didn't have press coverage. He had a safety on him. It was the only safety in man-to-man coverage. They had straight man-to-man across the coverage. Jerry Jeudy looks over. He gets the signal from Jalen Hurts. He runs the route in a very polished way, catches the ball.
Yep.
And so just compared to what you were saying with Robert Foster, look how Jerry Jeudy handled that play. He handled it how you would have expected a senior to handle it.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting? Like, because last week we also talked about, you know, and it's projecting a little bit through the TV, but, you know, it just seemed that, you know, Jerry Jeudy was saying, I'll step up, I'll be the guy. And it seems like he is, and it seems like Robert Foster is letting him. And I hate to say that. I don't want to sort of pile on our guy, but.
No, that's an interesting sequence of two different series. In the scoring, you know, in literally deep in your opponent's territory, two different times there was matchup opportunities, and it's just interesting. I wanted to point out for the listeners how the two receivers handled it. That's all.
Right. Hey, so what do you think? I mean, we're really sort of breaking down the offense here. All this stuff's a whole lot easier when Damian Harris 2 weeks in a row is going to, you know, early in the game run a 75-yard touchdown, right? And all this other stuff is just easy, right?
It is, man. And you know, Damian should be pissed at us for not starting with him. But, you know, just, you know, unfortunately.
Hey, that's the Damian Harris life. That's the Damian Harris life, right?
Well, getting to watch the replay on the TV, okay, is better than in person. Because of the, you know, enhancements of the camera angles.
Right.
On the replay, you're able, you know, watching it again on TV, you're able to truly appreciate just his vision. And obviously, you know, dropping a few pounds in the offseason obviously, you know, has helped as far as when you get to the 25, you know, yard line, 25 yards out, 35 yards out, 40 yards out, etc. But on that particular play, once again, you know, the linebackers overran the play, and he quickly sees it, and the safety did too, which, you know, and he takes the right angle so that he can score. And right. What's so interesting about that, David, is that these guys just watched the tape of last week's game. They just watched the free safety take the wrong angle and allow him to, you know, take it to the house. And so if you're the safety for Arkansas who just watched that, who the coach told you not to let this happen, and you let it happen on the very first play, oh my gosh, man, watching this tape on Sunday had to be rough for him.
No, it definitely did. And it had to be, you know, you think about the play started to the right, which is where, you know, Damian ran his 75-yarder last week. And, you know, some of the post game from from the players, you know, spoke to, we thought that they would over pursue on the run. And so you run sort of that, you know,
that same
you
know, action
body, right. And yep. So everything is moving, you know, in that direction. And so, you know, that either a big hole was going to open up because there's so many blockers, or you're going to have this big cutback lane. And so either way, you know, make the decision. And so to think that, yeah, the whole thought is they're going to over pursue first play from scrimmage. They over pursue that much. Don't you think that? And I'm being a little bit silly here, but don't you have to think like the coaches and some of the players are like, damn, this is going to be easy.
Well, there's a reason why that was the first play, you know, of the 15 scripted plays that was called, right?
Sure.
And so this goes back to time in the film room, right? That, you know, they were probably sitting there all week saying this was going to be a big one. We're going to break this for a big one.
Yep.
So.
Hey, what about Damian's second touchdown? And I think, you know, and it as impressive as it was, I think Hale, you know, it just helped make it impressive because he missed his block. But
yes, but, he did miss his block.
But he missed it bad. but the
guy that should feel bad is Santos Ramirez, man.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to give bulletin board material like that, you got to back it up, right?
Yeah. But Damian, I mean, I thought he was going to lose yards, and then I thought he's going to get back to the line of scrimmage. Oh, he's going to gain a couple yards, and he just kept fighting and really fought through three or four defenders, and he just would not be denied. That was an impressive performance. His two touchdown runs, and he had other carries too, but his two touchdown runs, man, they were quite impressive, huh?
Well, what was nice about that run, obviously, right, the breakdown in the blocking scheme, as you mentioned, but he made the guys, okay, he did something different on all the guys he avoided.
Yes.
And so the first guy, you know, he had him in the backfield, he literally just sold him on a fake and just showed his elusiveness. And then when he popped outside, he just literally did a Sean Alexander type of move and kind of dropped his shoulder and just kind of just rubbed through a guy. Well, then he powered through a defensive lineman who should have taken him down and just showed his strong ass legs and his, yep, his low point of, you know, low center of gravity. And then that strong safety tried to wrap up like we talk about guys not doing, and he just ran right through him. And so it was an impressive sequence on all the different moves he did to get to the goal line. And what's so interesting about this, just like his run last week where he got to the 1 yard line and didn't score, right? And we said he should have been given the opportunity to get that other touchdown.
Yep.
You know, just the grit and you're not and that I'm not gonna be denied attitude that he is showing. You know, we just haven't seen this from this kid before.
No,
I mean, take nothing away from this kid, but what we're seeing in this kid this year is, you know, we just haven't seen it to this level before.
No, we haven't. And what's interesting is, you know, think about this. He had 9 carries. I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, plays that you remember for a long time, right? And his performance, and he did them in 9 carries. And so there's a little bit of mental preparedness you have to have that you're not going to get, you know, 5 or 6 plays to warm up. This is it. This is the plays you get. And for him to, you know, put up a buck 25, 2 touchdowns, have some really just sort of standout runs. And he did it all on 9 carries. I mean, that, you know, when the game kicks off, dude's ready to play.
Well, he is. And you know, like we were talking about earlier, you know, last week's show about keeping guys fresh and stuff, right? Typically, the starter for Alabama would get 20 carries.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to give you less wear on your body. And here you are sitting in, you know, week 7, and we'd have to go and look at, you know, his total carries for the year so far. But it is making the most of your opportunities. And what a nice problem to have that, you know, we had 4 rushing touchdowns from guys that had a total of 24. Yeah, we had 4 rushing touchdowns from 4 different guys, 3 different guys that had a total of 24 carries.
Yeah.
So that's pretty nice. It's nice how it's being distributed.
Yeah. Hey, I like Ruggs, man. He has 4 catches for the season. They're all for touchdowns. And the touchdown pass that he caught, that pass from Jalen, that was nice. On the run, putting that ball on target, that was nice on both ends of that pitch and catch.
No, it was a nice throw. And, you know, I do think, once again, he is – you know, I'm sure this is coaching here that's coming into play, but there is an absolute obvious conscious effort on his part to try to sit in the pocket for a longer period of time.
Yep.
And I'm just glad that they're working with him that way, because that's absolutely gonna, you know, help in his development.
Anything else on offense, or you got a mini game ball to give out?
There's a lot of stuff we could talk about, man, but we'll save it for next week because they're just going to do the same shit again. So we'll save it for the listeners for next week.
Give me your mini game ball.
So you want me to go first here? Okay. Man, there's just a lot of people I could give this to. I think I'm going to have to give it to, it probably is not the definition of mini game ball. Well, I'll do one the definition of your mini game ball and one that's not. So Jerry Jeudy, I got to give a nod just for what we talked about earlier. Obviously, yeah. The plays he's making, he probably doesn't fall into mini game ball category. He's not playing like a freshman. Right now, if he wasn't in there, if these freshman receivers were not making plays right now, it would be a different situation because we expected a different result so far from our starting 3 wide receivers. Yes. I'll just say it that way as a package deal. And right now, what the 3 true freshmen are providing is essential right now to go with for this team to be where they are.
Yep. So you gave one to Jeudy. Who else gets one?
Devonta Smith, man.
Who?
Devonta Smith.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I'm just giving him some love because he is getting a lot of playing time because he is showing a physicality in the running game, and he is showing a willingness to get his head in there and drive guys 10 yards off the ball. You know, Saban loves that crap. And
he's undersized too. For him to play with that level of physicality, he is a little undersized at the position.
No, he is. You know, the program says he's 165 pounds. And so if he's truly only 165 pounds laying a lick like that, I can't wait till he's been in the strength program for a couple years and see what he looks like.
No, I think that's a good pick. Yeah, the freshmen on this team are very impressive, and the receivers are just – I'm surprised that all of them are playing. I thought Devonta may not because of his size, that he may redshirt, but you can't – discount, you know, his contribution. It is very, very impressive to watch. And I'm going to a freshman for my mini game ball. I'm giving it to Najee Harris. He late in the game, the game was over, but he ran with just a fury. And he sort of in person, emblazoned and personified Saban's approach. Don't look at the scoreboard. Go out there and play to a standard. And the game, I mean, it wouldn't have mattered really what he did with the ball, except for he ran with just an anger and a physicality that said, I'm going to get mine, even if it's late, you know, late in the game. I think that really like resonates across the team. And it's impressive to see a freshman do that. Man, he's another one of these guys. I mean, they're going to be the future leaders of this team. And it's neat to see them exhibit some of those qualities as true freshmen.
Well, what did you think about the fact that in the last, you know, series, you know, starting the last series with, you know, 3 minutes left in the game, that we do give the ball twice to Najee Harris, and then we give it twice to Brian Robinson for his only two carries. I found it interesting that Brian gets his with a minute left in the game. It's almost like either they forgot or they're like, okay, we got to give him some as well.
Yeah, you know, I think there is a little bit of you know, call it a pecking order, right? And I, you know, 1 to 5, I like all of them. You know, they could all, in my book, get 10 or 12 carries. They're just, it's just hard. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
And for whatever the reasons, we don't see during practice. And, you know, and even in practice, you have to sort of, you can't distribute the ball evenly in practice because, you know, some people need, you know, they need the more prep because they're going to play more. And so I think it's a little bit of just, there's five guys, right? And they can't all get 20% of the load. And Brian's, you know, the fifth guy.
I just thought it was interesting. His two carries came on the very last two plays.
Right.
After the flashes he has shown, right, that we talked about. And that's just the embarrassment of riches. That you got a guy that has shown what he has shown when he has gotten to play. And, oh, imagine Arkansas's defense when he came, you know, when he gets the ball in the last two carries.
Right. But think about that though, right? Because you're right. He has shown, you know, flashes. He does look, I mean, he's legit. He's as good as any of them. I'll say that. But who hasn't, you know, who has not flashed such that his flash moves him up, right? I mean, who does he overtake for 4 and 3, right?
That's the problem for him right now. I mean, Josh Jacobs is demonstrating, you know, why he's probably ahead of these other two guys. You know, there's a little seniority factor, and Josh is earning that, right? Mm-hmm. He's got experience, and he's earning that. Hey, very quickly before we flip the field, what was your thoughts on Tua's pass to Josh Jacobs that went for 33 yards?
Oh, I'm glad that you brought that up. I really enjoyed his pocket presence, his awareness, and he stepped up to get the throwing lane. That was nice. That was nice.
But there's that running back again. We talked about Josh and you know, Bo, right? Yep. And just what they bring to the offense. And this is helping that wide receiver production, right? I mean, that's a big 33-yard play.
No, it really is. And I, you know, I've my response on Tua because – you know, because Jacobs, you know, right? He does what he does. And now that he's back to sort of full strength, you know, that's what you come to expect out of him. But to see the freshman kind of do what he did, that was impressive too. You know, we were just talking about, you know, you brought up Jacobs again, and we were just talking about, you know, Brian Robinson. So if Jacobs had entered the season healthy, would Robinson have redshirted?
Yes.
That's what I think too.
Yep. I think he would have. And he probably, just like we talked about with Bo, right? I mean, right now, Bo and Damian could still both go. And same thing at wide receiver, right? I mean, easily, you know, Cam's going to graduate and Foster's going to graduate and Ridley's going to go. And so I'm glad that these three true freshmen are getting run because they're all going to need experience next year.
Well, think about this, right? Not only are they contributing this year, but, you know, but there is an intentionality in let's get them reps because next year they are the guys.
Correct.
So let's grow them up while we continue to dominate. That's, I mean, not many teams get to do both.
Right. Right. But look, next year, right. That's going to be your depth chart. Right. And yeah. So, I mean, you could have Ruggs, Judy and Smith as your starting three wide receivers next year. And if they've all got 10, 15 catches under their belt, that's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. With Jacobs, Najee, and Brian as your three running backs.
Right. Exactly correct. Well, tell me about
and guess what? That doesn't bother me. We can talk about other positions, you know, where I might have some bother. Boy, those two skill positions, not bothered a bit.
No. And you can, you know, and you know, obviously you win with defense, but you know, having those six quality guys on the offensive side of the ball that could have easily gone to six different schools, you know, is a good problem to have.
Absolutely.
Well, tell me real quick on defense. I noticed a few times that Hootie Jones was not in the game in the base nickel, and Minka was flipped back to safety, and Tony Brown came in at his star position. You know, just a handful of times, 3 to 5 times, and I thought Hootie was hurt. He did come back in later. He is wearing a brace on his right shoulder, which he was wearing at the beginning of the game, so I don't think that was added during the game. You know, obviously didn't notice anything, you know, and nothing was talked about. But did you see that? Did you see that Minka had to go drop back and play safety some?
Well, you know, we move Minka around, and we do that, you know, as a function of design. And so I wasn't really watching him move around and thinking of, you know, who was in and who was out. And I kind of took a do not travel or, you know, did not travel with that, you know, DNT this weekend. So, you know, those type of rotations are so much easier in the stands than just what they let you see on TV. But you know, I don't know. I know that Tony was a little dinged, and there was some thought that he might not play as much. But, you know, but you're asking about Hootie. You know, at this point in the season, probably a lot of players are a little bit dinged up. And so I don't think that I necessarily knew that he was dinged. But
I guess let me ask this a different way. In the base nickel, you want your best five guys on the field. And was that them saying Tony Brown has shown us enough in his development to earn the right to be the one of those five guys some in that base package? And we'll pull Hootie out, and we'll move Minka back to safety.
Yes, I think so. I think in the nickel that is exactly true,
because that's a luxury, right? I mean, you know, that's what people thought could be the case at the beginning of the season, and so I'm just saying that which will help this team long term is maybe Tony is earning the right to be on the field. Like when he was on the field and Minka was at safety, Tony was not always blitzing the quarterback.
Right.
He was dropping into coverage and covering his guy. And so his responsibilities were being expanded. And this is the first game I've seen that.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think Tony, I think probably gets a tough grow, you know, on our show, because I mean, he's a very good football player. But he's not a Minka, and he's not, you know, a D Milliner, and he's
not
these other guys. Right. But he's pretty good at what he does.
Well, you know, he is. And you talked about Minka, and, you know, going back to Tony for a quick second, I will say, and this is the secret sauce of Nick Saban, because we've talked about how there's not 11 starters on offense, not 11 on defense. And, you know, we got 20 something situational starters on both sides of the ball, et cetera. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What is that going to do? That's going to build your confidence.
Yes.
And so early in the season, I think Tony was being asked to do things that were very much in his skill set. The same way we just spoke about offensive players being brought in certain packages, because no offense, but maybe yesterday, you know, maybe Saturday, the pass that Tua threw, maybe it wouldn't have gone for 33 yards had it not gone to Josh Jacobs, right? And so maybe Tony has been able to build some confidence as the season has progressed, and, you know, it helps him in his practice and his, you know, film study and getting ready for the next week, et cetera. And just maybe all these things together, how they've brought him along this season, you know, just really bodes well for him and bodes well for the defense.
Yeah. You know, as you were saying that, is Tony Brown the defensive version of Robert Foster? He's just taking it a different direction?
I think to some extent. I think Tony has been asked and called upon to do a lot more than Robert was able to due to injury.
Yeah.
They've both
came in with you know, high-end
actors. Very high.
Both five stars. Both their careers have taken different routes. And Tony is finishing strong, and Robert hasn't failed at that yet, but struggling to get his legs under him, I would say.
Sure. You know, I want to go back to Minka. I would agree with that. I want to go back to Minka for a quick second and just talk about, you know, what they are allowing him to do is just really fun to watch. And I've never seen us do this with a defensive player.
Right.
For as long as we've been doing this show. And you were talking about them moving him around. And, you know, obviously, you know, he's a very smart guy. And, you know, to be able to do what he did, you know, mid-season last year speaks volumes to enable this team to even get to the national championship game. But right now, which is just really not freaking fair, you know, we're sitting here. I love our third and long package, man. Mm-hmm. We third and long, you know, we bring in Daron Payne because you're such a freak and you can rush the passer at the nose guard position as well as a defensive end. And oh, by the way, you're 308 pounds, so go sick them. And then we're going to bring in maybe Isaiah Bugs or Raekwon Davis or, you know, LeBrian Ray, which was, you know, a situation which was great. And so we got two guys with their hands in the dirt. And then we saw a lot of Anfernee Jennings in the game with Jamie Mosley combination. Or we'd bring in Rashawn Evans as one of those two linebackers. And so we'd have two guys with their hands in the dirt. We'd have two linebackers right next to them. Then we would come in the dime formation and we would have Minka playing the dime linebacker and he'd be right behind the, you know, right there in the trenches, a la where CJ Mosley used to be and just literally free to roam all over the place there. And that's just a matchup nightmare. I mean, for us to have the speed of two linebackers on the edge and two guys with their hands in the dirt, and we've got six DBs in the game, and we've got Minka right there in the center of the defense, 5 yards off the ball. Dude, I mean, that's just hard to get a first down on that play. I mean, that's just so hard.
Yeah, it really is. And so you've got these chess pieces that you can literally put anywhere, right? And they can do a lot of different things. You know, I was gonna ask this question and you know, you're talking about Minka. Like serious, man, is he not one of the best football players you've ever seen?
Man, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball, okay, he is a guy that could have played both ways.
Yeah.
Could have gone to a football program and played both ways.
I'm just saying what he brings to the field and the way that he can be deployed and not miss a beat. I just, you know, look, and there's a little bit of hyperbole there because he's the guy we're looking at right now, but
no, man. What makes this guy do what we're sitting here talking about is his intellect.
Right.
And what's so awesome for all the people coming up playing this sport, right? I mean, they talk about the quarterback of the defense and other players are making really good plays. I get it. Okay, but he is truly the quarterback of the defense, and he literally can line up anywhere, and he knows everybody's job and what they're supposed to be doing, and yes, he's a once in a decade type of player,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've seen a lot of talented players. I'm not trying to.
No, but
I mean,
how they're using him, man.
He's up there, right? He's up there.
He's up there. He's in the room, and not as a slight to any other players that have come through this great program.
No.
How he's being used, we've never seen a player used like that before.
No.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, once again, it seemed as if we didn't see as much Keith Holcomb. We didn't see as much Minka Brown. Saw a little bit of Chris Allen.
Yep.
You know, not much. not much from McMillan, and so or Moses, and so it is interesting to me that, you know, since Jennings has gotten healthy and Rashawn Evans has come back, the distribution of snaps, you know, some of these linebackers are just not getting as much run as they thank goodness got a few weeks ago.
No, but there's some good there. You know, I think there's a lot of good with that, right? And so early on, I mean, we were down five linebackers at one point. You've got to put a lot of parts out there and see what you've got. And it turns out we got some high end parts.
Got to get a lot on film.
Right. And so, you know, when you start to get, you know, Anthony back and you start to get, you know, Rashawn back with it and Moses as well. I mean, there are a reason that they were at the top of the list, right? The other guys are not going to play as much. But Christopher Allen played, and he played early. And the fact that Joshua McMillan is in there and he played a specialized kind of role, but he's in there and he's taking snaps, you know, from someone else and keeping someone else fresh. And so I like the fact that, a month ago we were throwing parts out there to see what we've got. Now we can deploy those parts in situational. They don't have to eat off their whole plate. They can just eat off a piece of it while they learn their role, get more and more comfortable on the field. And we're better for that now, having, you know, sort of gone through it earlier in the year. And I wish we had Terrell and Christian back. Don't get me wrong. I wish we had not had the injury, but
they'll be even better when they come back, though.
Yeah, it'll be incredible when they come back, because we're not really losing a lot to graduation.
When you say that, right, we're losing Sean Dion Hamilton and Rashawn Evans.
Right.
And so it's kind of like we talked about last week with the cornerback position, like we just talked about with the wide receiver position. Fortunately, we've got a lot of talent depth-wise who are getting some valuable experience, because while we're not losing a lot of players, the players that we're losing are pretty key players.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'm not rooting for any of them to leave, but we've got the numbers there, and I feel good about the numbers. Now, cornerback, that's a different story. But Rashawn and Hamilton played very well, and Rashawn seemed very active. He was in the backfield, disrupting, it seemed like, most of the night. What was your read on his play?
Well, it goes back to what I said about Minka, right? Before Sean Dion Hamilton got hurt, right, where was Rashawn Evans making his heyday? With his hand in the dirt.
Yep.
On the edge, going after the quarterback, right? He's very good at that.
Yes.
Well, in this Arkansas game, he was able to go back and do that five or six plays, because Minka was able to play right there where he was playing on first and second down, and he was able to go do what he was good at. And so he was able to expand his role back to some of where his comfort level was last year for the first game this season, and I think that was a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. you mentioned LeBryan Ray getting some run. It's good to see him in the rotation. I think the defensive front is going to be that much better when Deshaun Hand comes back. And then Bugs and Raekwon are continuing to develop. Although they both looked good on Saturday. This defensive front, I'm impressed with how it's coming along. Quinnen saw some more run. We even saw some Johnny Dwight late. Josh Frazier is playing better this year.
Josh Frazier made some key plays. He made some big stops in the backfield, man.
Yeah, yeah. So I like how the unit is coming together. Again, we'll say this again. I don't think it's as top end as it was last year, Jonathan Allen, right? But I like what we've got. I like what's assembled here on the defensive front. We can win with this group.
No, we can. And I think while the top end is not where it was last year, I would say right now, The depth might be more closer to where it was 2 years ago. The depth was better 2 years ago.
Sure.
But this is definitely better depth than we had last year.
Ah, okay. I got you to say it. Awesome. I was wondering that. Earlier in the season, I speculated.
I think that as these guys have gotten to play a handful of snaps, it's like Raekwon Davis. Raekwon Davis did not play a lot of snaps. Okay, on Saturday. He didn't play a lot of snaps, but he had five tackles, 1.5 sacks, 1.5 tackles for loss. I mean, that's huge. And when you look at the other guys on the stat sheet, okay, there's a long line on the box score of defensive guys filling up the stat sheet.
Oh yeah.
And if you look at it 2 years ago, right now I'm looking at 20 guys here that have the 65 tackles in this football game. I didn't count them. There's probably over 20. It's probably probably closer to 30.
No,
we just didn't have that last year or last year.
No, we didn't. And so I like that we have the depth developing because, you know, a player, you know, and you mentioned Raekwon, a great example. He doesn't have to save himself. When I'm out there, I go full blast. And I can trust that when I'm not out there, that we've got the depth and the rotation that's going to take care of things. And then I'm going to go back out there and I'm going to go full blast again. I like that. I had some concern at the beginning of the season whether or not we would have that depth and whether or not we would start to see some erosion at the defensive front. And I am pleased to say that I feel like we're getting stronger as the season goes on. And like I said, that will continue when Deshaun Hand comes back. And he's going to want to get in on the action, right? And so, you know, LaBrian Ray is in there getting some snaps, looking good. And Deshaun is going to come back. And so, again, I think we're going to get a little bit better across the defensive front as the season continues.
No, absolutely. And just one more thing I want to mention. We were talking about Rashawn Evans getting to do more of his comfort level, right? Well, second on the stat sheet, Rashawn Evans with 2 sacks. Third on the stat sheet, Sean Dion Hamilton with 1.5 sacks. So isn't it interesting that your two middle linebackers accounted for 3.5 of the sacks?
Yeah. I went back, you know, of the sacks that we had, they were all from the front, seven. But yeah, definitely linebackers involved heavily, which, you know, again, we kind of knew that. We kind of knew that we were going to get pressure less from the DL and more from the linebackers. And so we had like a you know, early in the season, we had, you know, some miss there because of the injuries. But with those guys coming back, we're starting to see more and more. And the Vanderbilt game was sort of a coming out party when Jennings and Rashawn came back. And they're just getting back, you know, they're getting more and more into form. So, yeah, I'll look for that to continue.
Well, we had 11 quarterback hurries on the day, man. That's not a bad number. Okay. In contrast, Arkansas had 2 quarterback hurries.
Right.
We had 11. I mean, you know, you're going to win some football games when you're getting that kind of pressure on the quarterback.
And if the quarterback weren't an oak tree back there, we probably would have converted more of those into sacks.
Yes. We would have had more than 5 sacks if he wasn't 6'7".
Man, there was one play. I'm sure you saw this too. Rashawn Evans, you know, just, you know, leapt up and grabbed, you know, Cole Kelly, you know, by the shoulder pads and had him doubled over. And this guy's 6'7" and was bent over at the waist with Rashawn holding him down. And Anfernee Jennings came literally came and knocked his ass over. And I was like, man, it takes 2 of these guys to get this guy down.
No, I did notice that. What else jumps out at you on defense or anything you want to talk about for the listeners?
Man, just speaking about jumping, Mac Wilson and his interception, man, he just seemed to fly out from nowhere and just seemed so athletic. And of course, you know, slow motion helps, but he kind of looked like Superman jumping out to get, and there were other defenders in the area, but he just sort of swooped in from nowhere to intercept that ball. And, you know, he's a kid that has his head on right, too, because Saban laid into him earlier in the game for a penalty that he picked up. And you know, he took his medicine and went back onto the field and performed and made just a really just high-end athletic play. I thought that was impressive.
No, I agree. And that's, you know, that's his second one he's had on the year, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, his one against Florida State was pretty nice as well. I'm just going to say it again. He reminds me of a young Dante Hightower.
Okay. I hate to say this, but maybe even a little more athletic.
No. Yes. More athletic. More athletic. Yes, indeed. Well, who's your mini game ball? Because I'm going to go first because I know you're not going to steal mine.
All right. Well, then go.
All right. So, the frequent quest of trying to frustrate you with my mini game balls.
Okay.
I'm going to give my mini game ball to the cameraman. Nope. To the cameraman who found Nick Saban right before he chewed out Mac Wilson right after the kickoff. Because when you take their slow-mo and you slow-mo it on your own slow-mo, you get to not only read his lips, but then you get to watch all the eyes behind him from the coaching staff and the players, and you get to see guys, and I won't call out any names, but you just get to see the sudden kind of they're trying not to look, and then they start looking, and like, is he really, really that upset? And is he, you know, is he really saying that, whatever he was saying? And I just had to watch that like five times. And this is not, you know, I feel bad. You know, this is not at Mac Wilson's expense. Not trying to be. But just this is what makes Coach Saban, right? This is why he's driven for success.
So we're a family show here, but can you disclose a little bit of your Rip Laning skills?
No need to do that. But just I have to say that just the white in the eyes and the pure fear of the players and the coaches on the sideline of when they were just watching this unfold, and they really wanted to say something, but they knew damn better not to say anything. It was just, I'm sorry. It was hilarious.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. I am giving my mini game ball to Deontay Thompson. He's a safety that came in and played late and laid a couple of big hits. He ended up with three tackles on the game. I think this guy, you know, he's gone through some let's call it off-season stuff that, you know, seems like he's been cleared of and certainly has played this season, but really had a couple of really big sticks, really sort of rallied the defense. And I want to give my mini game ball with a little bit of a caveat. And I know that you hate the targeting rule, and I find it sometimes frustrating too, but I understand. Let's try to be safe. But I'll say this, and it's like I don't like the speed limit in my neighborhood, but I will surely get a ticket if I break it. Deontay Thompson, he better watch his own film a little bit, because if he keeps hitting that way, he will get called for targeting, because he led a couple of times. And if the letter of the rule and whatnot, had they gone back and looked at that, he may well have gotten a targeting penalty. So I like his physicality. I like his willingness to get in there and lay a lick. All of those things I like. I think that he can probably refine his technique a little bit. But I think this is a guy. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the secondary and who's going to, you know, play roles next year. His name's at the top of that list. He's going to get a lot of run in the secondary next year. I hope he refines his tackling just a little.
Well, this is his time, right?
Yes.
I mean, when he gets those plays like you talked about, like Raekwon Davis, you know, leave it on the field, because you're only going to get a handful just because there's so many guys who are getting run. Well, talk to me about special teams. I want to start briefly with the I want to start briefly with your boy Ruggs. You know, while you were happy with him on offense, he keeps dropping these punts. We won't be seeing him back there for punt return, will we?
No, we will. We'll see him Saturday.
I'm saying if he keeps this up, we won't see him.
Well, no, if he keeps it up, he won't. But Trayvon, you know, has had his own little circumstances and
Saban just doesn't like that at all, is my question. I mean,
no, he doesn't like it at all. I kept, you know, when Trayvon dropped his, you know, Ruggs dropped two, Trayvon dropped one. I thought we're going to see Xavier Marks in there.
And right.
I would have put money on the table.
That's what I thought I would see.
Yep. I would have put money on the table that's what we were about to see. And I would not be surprised this week, because I think there will be a lot of punts for us to field this week. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a third player get a catch or two. It'll be late, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a third player, get an opportunity back there.
Well, let me ask you this, though. There was only five opportunities to catch punts, and Ruggs got two, and you know, Diggs got three. Do you think that's the reason Ruggs only got two? Because I think it is, because he bobbled both of the ones he had.
He was yanked. I think, and Coach talked about his form. He was catching, you know, trying to catch the ball too low and whatnot. So yeah, I think he was yanked, and then and Trayvon, who has more experience, you know, marginally more, but he has more experience that he was put in there. So yeah, but I think they'll both now. But Saban was very complimentary of Ruggs. He said that, you know, he's got to work on his form and explain what he was doing. But he said that he is going, and I think Saban used the word great, and you don't hear Saban use that very often. But he said that, you know, essentially that Ruggs was going to have a good career as a punt returner. He just needs to clean up his technique. So that tells me that Saban really likes this kid, and has a lot of, you know, confidence in him, and is really impressed with his ability. So I think he'll be back in there Saturday. I don't think he'll start. I think Trayvon, and then we'll see Ruggs. We'll have to kind of see how that play out. I know Trayvon had, you know, a foot injury, and so where is he relative to that? I don't know. They'll both play, and like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if late in the game we saw a third guy.
All right. Anything else on special teams that you want to talk about?
You know, I like Andy hitting two kicks, two field goals, and, you know, true freshman Daniel Wright, number three. He continues to be a guy that gets down there in a hurry and will lay someone out. So I enjoy seeing that.
Well, I want to talk about the fact that, you know, last year we seemed to be kicking the ball. You know, we would line up intentionally to kick the ball to the left side of the, you know, of the end zone.
Yep.
And we would try to just go from kicking it out of bounds where it would be a penalty, right?
Yep.
Let me rephrase that. We would want it to go in the end zone, and then if it went out the side of the end zone, it would be okay, right? Because it would be a touchback. Well, several times in this game, the ball was in – it seemed to be, because J.K. was kicking it off, it seemed to be intentionally left short of the goal line at like the 2 or 3 yard line. And I just wanted your thoughts on this whole rule of, you know, now that you get it at the 25 – it seems like they are intentionally using Scott's athleticism and the speed that they have to choose from for their special teams, that they are trying to just take away even the freebie 25, because a couple times, you know, the guy'd catch the ball at the 3 and we'd tackle him at the 10. And it's like, shit, he only got 7 yards, but he's got to run with the ball because he caught it at the 3 yard line. I just want to get your take on that.
No, I think you're spot on, and I think that is, you know, you start to look for advantages. Where can you squeeze another ounce out of this? Where can you get a little more, you know, advantage, a little more, you know, margin? And you know, it's interesting because I've kind of been. I read something at the beginning of this year, beginning of the season, and Sports Illustrated's their NFL. You know, preseason deal. And they had, you know, the Patriots were sort of all in, you know, all up in it. And they talked about that's something that Belichick was intentionally trying to do is, you know, squeeze out those extra yards and that extra advantage for his defense. Right. And so we don't want them to return it necessarily. We don't want to give it to them on the 25, but if we can force them to get it at the, you know, between the 8 and the 12, then advantage us. And it just feels like, and you have to have a talented kicker and, you know, coverage team and all that stuff. But it feels like that's what we've been trying to do, is if we can squeeze out, because he can boot it out, and that's fine. And we've had some times this season where he's intentionally tried to do that. Huh, I wonder if that aligns up when we had so many linebackers out. I don't know. But, you know, I wonder if we're not also intentionally saying, you know, if we can get it to them in the 3 and we can get them down by the 8 or 10 or 12, then that's what we want.
It's just kind of like we talked about offense and defense, right? It's just the genius of Coach Saban. right? Because if you've got a guy like J.K. Scott, who we've already said is a freak of a punter who can just drop the ball, you know, at the 1 or 2 yard line, and he's got a strong leg, then it just seems like they've intentionally worked with him on, you know, once he started, you know, adding this to his repertoire of, okay, you can drop a punt at the two. Well, let's just start dropping a field goal kick at the two. It's just to me, it's just a little nuance that a lot of people aren't going to notice.
No, and a lot of teams aren't going to try to do it because you've got to have a really, really talented kicker. And then you've got to have the coverage team that you have the confidence to sort of lean on too. It wasn't that many years ago, Tommy. We were just, please, can we just kick it out of bounds?
Yes.
Can we kick it out of the end zone?
Yes.
And we just would have been ecstatic with just, can we just do that? And now we're going back and we're saying, okay, we can do that just about anytime we want to, but that's giving them a quarter of the field.
Yes.
We give them something less than a quarter of the field. 25% of the distance they have to go. Can we give them something less than that?
Yes. Well,
yeah, we can give them 12.5%. Okay, done. We'll take it.
Yeah. Now you got to drive 87, 88 yards against us. I just think it's, you know, I'm going to keep an eye on this as we go forward, but yeah. I thought it was a good thing to bring up.
Hey, was that a cheap shot on Damon Harris to his man region?
Yeah, I think you could say so. Do you not think so?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I went back and it happened so quick, like in real time, I didn't see it, but I went back and rewound it and the TV, you know, they did as well. He looked like he got run over by a truck because he was just standing there walking away from the play and he goes down. And then they showed it from another angle and the lineman came in and seemed to almost, you know, kick his leg out to hit Damien. And I have not, you know, I've been working today, so I didn't see any sort of media on it, but I hope to see that player has been reprimanded because I do think that was an intentional cheap shot.
Oh, there's absolutely going to be somebody who's going to want to try to take him out, right? Because
yeah.
he's making a lot of teams look bad.
Yep.
Well, tell me as we flip the field or flip the schedule here to, you know, to the big rivalry game. Some of the luster is a little bit less now than it was a few weeks ago, but you know it is Tennessee. So kind of give me your thoughts on this game.
Yeah, I tell you what I think about this. I think sometimes you're the windshield and sometimes you're the bug, and Tennessee's the bug on this one. And look, it here's how this breaks down. You know, they're 3-3. They are incredibly and they should be, you know, they should have lost to Georgia Tech. They were pinning a whole lot on that South Carolina game. I think they're going to collapse. I really do. I think they're going to quit. On
that was
Saturday.
That might have been the breaking point, right?
Yes. I think they said if we can go and beat South Carolina at home, sort of re-energize ourselves, we can get to 4-2. Look, Alabama's Alabama, but then we're gonna be 4-3. We're gonna get into a bowl game and we're gonna be in good shape. But they lost. That, you know, they lost that slap fest to Florida, and then they lost to South Carolina, and they actually played pretty well, and you know South Carolina did too, but it was, you know, a lot of field goals back and forth, just ineffective offenses. They trotted out a new quarterback, and he looks good, looks like he has some potential, but you know he's not there yet, and they played with a lot of emotion early. You know, they scored all of their points in the first half, and then they were done. And I think they will continue to be done. I think it's a 52-6 kind of game, and I don't know where they get six.
Well, you know what's interesting, man, is they've got a really good coach, and it looks like he's lost. It looks like he's lost control of his team, and it looks like the natives are restless and. And it everything you just described, I think is a possibility. And You know, I'm going to tell you that I think that this might be Butch Jones's last game at Tennessee.
I don't think it's his last game. They would have fired him. They would have fired him before the bye, and so I think they're gonna ride him out this season. But I can't. And I hear what you're saying. I'm only saying
that because if this game is the kind of score you're talking about, you know, I could see an overreaction by the Tennessee administration.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. And so, that's fair. I don't know. I mean, what do you do at that point? I guess. But you made the comment. He's a good coach, and I don't. I think he probably is too. Right. I think he's. And sometimes I wonder if he's not a clown. I think he's a poor man's Les Miles, where he actually is a really good coach. He just can't get out of his own way sometimes. And Les did that in sort of a quirky kind of way.
And it worked for him.
And Butch Davis does that kind of in a dumbass kind of way.
Right. It worked for Les, and it's not working for him.
Yeah. This idea, you know, champions of life and getting leadership reps. I mean, just some of the stuff he says, it's like, where are you getting this? This is like from a bad Saturday Night Live sketch. And this is how he's coaching his team. And they got that damn trash can for turnovers. I mean, it's just like, it's not even that you're trying too hard. It's cheap and gimmicky. So I don't know. I think the team quit. I think their team quits. And honestly, I don't. They may quit early. They may have quit on the flight down. I really do. I mean, I think that. And Saban will go out of his way to try not to embarrass him because he understands the coaching fraternity and all of that. I really believe that. But I think their team is going to quit in such a way that it's going to be hard not for it not to be a big score.
No, I agree. There's a big possibility that this game could be over before kickoff from their mental standpoint. And I just think that, you know, from a rivalry standpoint and how big of a game this is between these two programs, it's tough for me to see that kind of score from an Alabama-Tennessee game.
Yeah.
Although last year, you know, was a 49-10 and that was, you know, that was at their house.
Yep.
So that wasn't too far from your number. So, you know, I'm going to say you're probably, more spot on that we break 50, which, you know, if you do 49 one year and break 50 against Tennessee the next year, you know, how cool is that? But I'm going to say that I think that this game is probably more of a 35-7. And we're going to walk away and we're going to wonder why, you know, we left some points on the scoreboard. I just think that there's going to be some guys in that locker room that are just going to stand up and say, you know, by damn, we're seniors and this is Alabama and, you know, and we're going to play for our coach. And I just think something's going to just put a little extra fight in them that we're obviously going to – there's not going to be a doubt that we're going to win this game.
Right.
But it's just hard for me to say that, you know, that we can put those kind of points up against Tennessee, but that would be fun to watch.
No, I hear you. And I certainly understand that because it is a big rivalry game for both teams. But you know, we're both in agreement. The good guys are smoking cigars on Saturday, right?
No, absolutely.
All right. Very good. Very good. Hey, I'm going to do that thing that I like for us to do at the end of the show. And let's call out a review that we have.
All right, man, I'm ready. Let's hear it.
So this week it's only one. And so, hey guys, get out there and gals, get out there and leave us a review. But this is, from Marathon Rye. That just sounds like a good whiskey, right?
Absolutely, man. We have to try some of that.
I'll have to check that out. But, Marathon Rye tells us, this podcast gives you all the information on the game just played with expert analysis from two of the most well-informed guys to follow the Crimson Tide. If it happened in the game, it's covered here. Keep it up and roll tide. That's words, man.
That is very nice, man. We appreciate the shout out, and we love doing this. And this helps get other people to find out about us so they can tune in. And so we appreciate y'all taking the time to make these comments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Tom, I think we're ready for the tide to roll again Saturday. So, buckle up. Here it comes, right?
Absolutely, man. It'd be nice to, you know, tromp your rival, have a cigar, and then you have a bye week, man. How cool is that?
And you know what? And I wanted to say this one during the Tennessee section, so I'm sorry. I'm going to get serious here for another minute. Is this team as fresh as we've seen it going into the bye in like several years?
Yes, because of what we've talked about with the versatility and the packages and the personnel and you know, this other teams need to be freaking just scared as shit right now.
Right.
Because as teams like Clemson, you know, lose and teams like Auburn lose, you know, right now, man, you know, a lot of people, you know, was picking Alabama to, you know, to make a good run at this. But, you know, right now, you know, it's hard to sit here right now and say I feel better at 7-0 than I did last year with the Jonathan Allens on the roster.
Right.
But I do. And that's crazy. That's just crazy. But that just speaks to Coach Saban and what he has built.
Yeah, and it's a great point because at the beginning of the season, I wouldn't have said that. I wouldn't have believed it. But yet here we are, right? And the team is, you know, we've gone into this Tennessee game like, man, if we can just get past one more game, then we've got the break and we're going to be all right. And, you know, we almost lost to Tennessee.
It was 19-14 2 years ago. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, four of the top 10 lose and Alabama looks lethargic in a 41-9 victory. So, you know, what Saban's doing is working. And, you know, I think we chalk one more up on Saturday and then, you know, the team gets a well-deserved break. And I know that they're looking forward to that. And they're going to go out and lay it on the line Saturday.
Yeah, man. And we get a bye week before LSU, who always gets a bye week before us. And so right now, the way LSU has played these last 2 weeks, getting a bye week before them, I think is huge.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And you know what? It's them getting a bye, I think it hurts them because they've actually got some momentum.
Yes.
And so them I think is going to unplug their momentum, whereas it's going to give our guys I think just a boost and you know, to be able to catch some rest. So I don't know, but let's not get too far ahead.
No, absolutely.
Let's take care of the Vols on Saturday. Let's enjoy a nice cigar and enjoy the week off.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for listening, guys.
Absolutely. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.